I'm here to fuck pirates up. Okay. I'm not here to mind link them with terrible thoughts. No, I'm sending lampreys straight into their brains.
And with that, everybody, welcome to Reckless Attack, a 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons actual play podcast. I am, as always, your GM, Nathan, excited to be around the table with the lovely, lovely folks here. And first of all, I'd like to thank dear, dear person to my left, Sophie, for setting the fucking tone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm here to fuck shit up and leave no pirates alive.
Leave no witnesses.
And that's that, and no one will stand in my way. There's no moral I will learn. There's nothing that I will learn about these people that will stop me from exacting vengeance upon them.
I feel like this is Val's Punisher moment. She becomes the Punisher for Sky Whale.
Did she bring out the axe? Like,
Well, now is the time. Hey, Sophie, who is this that is exacting Punisher-style vengeance upon these whalers that may or may not be before you here this evening?
Hi, everybody. I'm Sophie, and I'll be playing Valeska Carter, the human asterisk, cleric asterisk of the Arcana Domain, who has, again, become the Punisher for Sky Whales because we have found the poacher pirates and their skyship that have been killing these beautiful, beautiful creatures. And to my left.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jonathan, and I play Checkers, the Grung Druid, and his trusty frog pals, Mango and Junior. And Checkers is also very excited to be here next to the airship, but for very different reasons. Like, Checkers is like a fan, kind of, but like also very ready to have his own skyship. So it's a weird little thing going on for him.
A classic druid conundrum.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I need to state that on the feelings wheel, excitement is not the feeling.
That's not the smiley face that you're pointing to.
Yeah, no, no. Checkers is definitely on the excitement feelings wheel.
And to my left. Hi, everyone. I'm David, and I play Kaskrin Brightmane, a dwarven sorcerer. And Kaskrin is not looking forward to this new era where the Golden Tree Adventuring Guild is always in the air. Because we did that coming here on the Raven's Bounce, and I was kind of hoping to be like walking home. But no, if everything goes as planned, we're going to have a new airship at the end of this. And I'm like,
In a way, there's a version of that where Kaskrin's like, wait, what's the adventure? I don't know. Whatever. You guys are going? Sure.
Why not? Yeah, cool. Yeah. All right, we're going out in the forest? Great. Cool. See you there. And to my left.
Hi, everyone. My name is Steve, and I am playing Selv Asterlin, the dragonborn monk, who is a bit worried at seeing Val, but, you know, hopefully it'll all work out. She's just going to knock him out really hard.
She's got full Schwarzenegger Predator war paint on.
It was 1,000% what I pictured. It was like, I'm not Nathan. You don't get to make that character choice for Sophie or Val. But also, that is 100% is that, again, you are just covered in mud. Mm-hmm. You are just, like, ready. You have all sorts of various weapons strapped to you.
If you could, like, have a minigun that just shot cantrips, like, you would.
That's essentially what she is as it is anyway, but, you know,
that's basically what Eldritch Blast is.
Yeah, that's true. So, as we've kind of alluded to, we've pretty much said it, you guys, after a little bit of fact-finding and triangulation and wilderness survival and tracking, have come upon, that probably undersells it, you guys have successfully not only found the kind of general location of some whalers, some sky whalers that you've been tracking down, thanks to a tip from friendly Ravenmount to Juniper, but have actually done so well that you have found where their hideout is, or at least one of their hideouts, you presume. But it is nighttime. You guys have arrived with very little fanfare. We were seemingly able to walk up to the, you know, kind of the edge of eye line to this camp to be able to look down. And before you, you see, I would say, two kind of main zones of interest. One is, you know, kind of more mundanely, is just a little outcropping of rock, maybe a dugout area in the side of a hill that you can't see too much activity because it's pretty dark and it's still several hundred feet away. But there is unmistakably a campfire with some amount of activity going on around it that leads into, again, a darker area that you can't tell how deep it is. And also, I guess moored is the maybe the right word?
Yeah.
Tethered to the ground a few hundred feet up, maybe a little higher. We were talking ahead of time. Maybe a little higher than people were expecting for a secret, very rare airship, but is tethered a skyship. I previously described it a little bit, kind of picture like a lionfish, which is just has fins pointing out in all directions and in directions that don't really make sense for a nautical vessel, but I don't know, maybe make sense for something that flies through the air. No one's really sure about the physics of it, but is definitely unmistakably a ship. It is a little patchwork. It is a little old. It definitely doesn't look in its prime, but there it is flying in the air, so must be doing okay. Really quick, though, I would like to lay a little scene setting. For you guys, the airship is something none of you would have seen. Almost certainly something that no one you know would have ever seen. Probably something that your grandparents wouldn't have seen, that your great-great-grandparents, no one really in living memory has seen anything like this. As we have discussed before, Rixia has a history of magic ebbing and flowing. The time of the Ultra Giants was no magic. You guys are currently in kind of a medium to high, trending upwards area. And these skyships were invented towards the end of a low magic into a magic is coming back area. It is very technological. It is very steampunk. And is a relic of something that has been either lost to time or, in the case of the Pentarchy, forcibly destroyed.
So, question for that.
Please.
The airship is currently moored and floating, right?
Correct.
Is it loud? Is there, like with all the moving bits and all of that, is there, like, engines going and... is it loud that we think it would be enough to cover, you know, any incidental sounds we might make? And also, you know, I have delicate ears. How loud are we talking here?
So you guys are still a good hunk away, and you, of course, can start approaching at any point. But as of right now, you don't hear jet turbines or you don't hear, you know, the blades of a helicopter essentially whirring or anything like that. Certainly the version of an airship that you guys saw in the library had a lot of propellers and that sort of thing. But as of right now, it is floating serenely.
And just in general, how big are we talking? Like length?
I would say it is probably, I don't know, 50 or 60 feet. I will.
Yeah. Is it a small ship or a big ship?
It is a relatively medium to small ship.
Okay.
It is not huge.
It's an agile ship.
Precisely. So good sized. Probably 2-3 stories max, or excuse me, three floors. Yeah, three levels, whatever it is. But is, again, floating silently in the sky above you, just kind of barely lit by the stars and the moon.
So Castgren is kind of like looking around and like just, you know, kind of passively perceiving this. Like we're in kind of a shadowy hiding spot. And so he turns to Self, he turns to Checkers. Like, kind of brings everyone to this group huddle. And Val with her face paint on.
Where's Val? We can't see her. She's too blended in.
Can you guys take a look? See what we're dealing with? I'm a little worried if they've got this level of security. They've got patrols around here. And I don't think I want to go clink-clanking in there and send anything off.
Well, I have a way we can all go, actually.
Are we going to do the backpack thing again where we all climb on Self? I thought that was a one-time deal. I'm not...
I would like to downvote that one.
And Checkers is going to cast the second level druid spell, Pass Without Trace.
Ooh. Ooh. Wow. Seems good.
So for the next hour, all of us, including Mango, have plus 10 to stealth. And what this looks like is everyone's skin kind of turns into this... It's got like this kind of liquidy sheen almost, like it's like a like an amphibian, like a frog.
Mm-hmm.
And as you move your arms and legs around, your skin actually takes on the color of your background, of your surroundings.
I wasted this face paint.
No, you actually disappeared.
Yeah, no. The face paint just stays on, and you can see that walking around.
He's giving you a plus 10. You get an extra plus 1 on top of that.
I'm taking it. I'll need it.
So
plus
11. It's essentially like everyone's turning into these like octopi. And as you're like moving your legs around, they're not stepping; they're like gliding and twisting along the ground.
I take back my head.
Yeah, right. We said twisting. I'm like, I don't know.
It's this weird. Like you think you're gonna step, but then your foot just goes boop.
But it makes sense.
We're all walking like the Ministry of Funny Walks.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you don't leave any tracks or anything like that. So you are truly, essentially, gliding over the terrain.
Yeah. So, cool. Right. But yeah. So this will be for the next hour. And you can go wherever you want. You plus 10 to stealth. And we can go explore.
Screw you guys, I'm going home.
Yeah. Explore the pirate's hideout together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll start kind of making our way a little closer to the skyship so we can get a better sense of what's around there.
Everyone give me a perception check.
21 for Val.
Caskrin with a 22.
Selv with an 8, because I rolled a 1.
Checkers with a 20.
Ooh, look at you guys. You are locked in.
Yeah.
Except for
ninth level adventurers.
Selv is just like not paying attention to stuff around him. He just keeps like looking at his stuff, yeah, at his hands as he puts it next to other things.
So this is kind of your first impression of things. There is more, certainly you... I, GM Nathan, am telling you there is more information to be gleaned as you kind of approach, but your first kind of instincts while you are still, again, several hundred feet away, is you can now for certain see at least a half a dozen people over near the campfire. You don't see any sentries, really. Every once in a while, you maybe would catch someone like looking out, but you don't see anything. The other kind of key detail that you guys all see with that very high perception check is you do catch a glimpse of some very faint flickering orange light coming from the windows of the ship itself. It could be firelight, could be a torch, could be something along those lines, but it seems to be that sort of a light also.
So there's people up there.
Potentially indicating that, yes. Or at least, again, that there is a light source and someone put it there at some point.
I don't know about you, Caskrin, but this feels kind of like a trap. I mean, we got one campfire and six people sitting around guarding this airship. Something feels a little off to me.
And do we get a sense of what the people at the campfire are doing? Are they, like, drunk? Are they, you know... telling stories, like, are they distracted? That kind of stuff.
They're definitely all... There's a lot of chatter around the campfire. Again, I'm assuming you guys are still pretty far back.
Okay.
I'm not making you roll any stealth rolls or anything like that. You're just still kind of on the approach. But yeah, you can hear voices talking, and they're not yelling or anything like that. Just chatter. Most of them appear to be sitting or standing near the fire.
Caskrin would actually like to do another perception check. Mm-hmm. Now that we're hearing voices... Because Caskrin is well used to the tone of soldiers, of warriors that are, like, sitting by a campfire at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And he wants to know, like, are these people who are genuinely tired after a long day of travel? Are they jubilant at having restocked after stealing from the travelers? Or are they putting up an act?
I will give you an option. Yes, you absolutely can. I love that. I will give you an option. Perception or insight are both, I think. It's one of those of like, where you get options to roll. Read your DMGs, everybody.
Nice. I will use perception in this case.
Cool.
That is 11.
They just seem to be boisterous.
Okay.
So there is an amount of energy there, but in terms of tone, is it real? Is it anything like that? You just kind of hear campfire
chatter,
sounds,
yeah.
Basically.
Caspian turns to Checkers and says, I hear you, but I don't know that we're going to get up to the Sky Stalker any other way than through these guys. If this is a trap, I think we have to trigger it.
And I mean, I'm usually full of bloodlust too, but looking at Val, like, I don't know how much longer we can hold her back.
We're already restraining her with ropes.
I do think we need to move forward. We can regroup from there. Do we want to try to get as many of them quickly as possible, silently?
The other option is try to climb up whatever the mooring is and go straight to the ship itself.
I think we blitzkrieg them. I think they're all next to a fire in a small area. If we can get them all down quickly, even if it's loudly, let's do that.
So Cass in the back said everyone attack and it turned into a ballroom blitz.
To be, and also for those wondering, a blitzkrieg in Rixia is actually the name of a very famous warrior who really all he did was charge headfirst very quickly.
Vladimir von Blitzkrieg.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Before this happens, in the lead up, kind of whenever is stealthily appropriate, keeping in mind any spell durations, that sort of thing, is there any last-minute spells or buffs that folks want to cast?
Again, I love it when Nathan asks this question, because I'm like, oh yeah, great, I've got all these spells I want to precast. Checkers is going to cast the second-level spell Dark Vision on himself and on Mango. Realistically, he would have cast this on himself and Mango a long time ago, just because, like, we're, you know, adventuring in the darkness.
Reasonable.
Making our way here. But as we're, like, getting closer, he does have one spare spell slot left for Dark Vision. And he's looking at Val, and he's looking at Selv, and he's like...
As they're bumbling around yeah. in the dark, constantly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got one more. Who wants it?
Flip a coin. Flip a coin.
The cost is, you gotta say, thank you, Checkers. And Checkers just gives this shit-eating grin at both of you.
Checkers, I say thank you all the time.
I was going to say, there are many characters yep. who might take that poorly. Mm-hmm. No one in this group,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, right.
Everyone
okay.
would be like,
well, it makes him yeah. feel better, so he's going to keep asking for it.
So Val, I think, has more distance stuff than Selv. So if you want to take Dark Vision so that you can kind of be back and actually see what you need to hit with things...
I feel like Selv could close his eyes and would make no meaningful difference. Like, he would be just as accurate.
I'll go ahead and cast it on Val, then.
Because I know she'll say thank you, unlike
yeah.
Selv.
Yeah, right.
Thank you, Checkers. I very much appreciate this.
And Checkers...
You are a good guildmate.
Oh.
Caskrin, before we initiate combat as well, is also going to don his magical armor and make his obsidian warhammer from his stone.
Selv will cast all of his available 9th-level spells.
Mm,
Okay. There's no discernible difference in Selv or the area around you, but...
And I'd like to point out, they are instantaneous.
Yes, obviously.
No casting time.
Boom, 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 boom.
No
boom.
Discernible difference because time is stopped.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yes, exactly.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hello, this is your pilot speaking. I would like to welcome you to Reckless Airlines. Our total flight time for this episode is approximately 1 hour, and we will be cruising at an altitude of 2,000 frog stacks. In a little bit, the flight attendants will be by with complimentary clips and excerpts from previous Reckless Attack episodes. We know you have a lot of choices when it comes to 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons actual play podcasts, and we would like to thank you for choosing ours. If you enjoyed your experience during today's episode, please be sure to fill out the in-flight survey and leave us a rating or review, or tell a friend. Book your next flight with us at www.recklessattack.com, and thank you for listening.
Caskrin is going to kind of begin moving forward as we move with this kind of shadowy, illusionary disguise.
And Checkers and Selv will sort of go around the side just to make sure that we have them completely surrounded.
Okay. So, I would like both teams to make me group stealth checks, please.
That
That would be a 22 for Selv.
22 for Checkers as well. And then Mango has 18.
Selv, Checkers, and Mango kind of goes around the side, on or kind of goes around the far end, basically, to flank people. Now, Kaskrin and Val, with your plus 10s.
I am taking the plus 11 because I have face paint.
Okay, yep, I did say that, and I am happy to allow it.
21.
Kaskrin has an 11.
What?
I have disadvantage because of my armor. I already have a minus 1 to stealth, so I only got a plus 9. So Kaskrin is like kind of like trying to make through his way through the woods. Like, oh yeah, I'm so stealthy. This is great. And he doesn't hear just like the clank, 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 clank.
Well, because he's so used to the stone on stone sound.
Yeah.
Val just moves off at a tangent. Yes, and Cass just doesn't know.
Yeah.
I still within eyeline of you. I still see you.
Kaskrin uses it as a battle trigonometry and moves on a cosine to Val.
We have to remember cloth to stuff into his armor sections.
So, the five of you, including Mango, make your approach. What is the inciting incident for your guys' plan? I assume you've already talked about it. I am hand-waving that portion of it. But what is the go of this ambush?
I think it's not even that subtle. Kaskrin would probably just get to the edge of the clearing, get within 60 feet of these guys, and then like put his fingers in his mouth and blow this loud whistle. And at the same time, he pulls a little vial of something out of his spell component pouch, breaks it on his knee, and begins to cast a spell. Around the six creatures, humanoids, mortals, around the campfire, there's this kind of like slow, foggy malaise that begins to set in. And Kaskrin casts slow on the mortals that he can see.
Okay. First, something happens. Kaskrin, what's your AC?
My AC, 17.
Could you make me a constitution saving throw? Concentration, please.
That is an 8, and I fail. Oh, no.
Yes, you do. From underneath you, Kaskrin.
Oh, God.
And Val, you catch out of the corner of your eye something in a whip crack. Tightens and coils around Kaskrin, and you see him light with electricity.
Ah!
As there appears to be some sort of creature wrapped around him with its fangs sunk into his neck and electrocuting him. You take, I'm sorry, 18 points of piercing damage.
Oh, no.
Wow.
What?
I rolled really good. I'm really sorry about that. And in that moment,
is that the signal?
You hear a voice cry out from the campfire saying,
"Oh, who thinks they could steal from the likes of us? Me, the most famous captain of these skies, Silvertooth Livingstone. Thief of the plains, predators of the clouds, and master of the last skyship of Rixia. Get him, boys!"
And everyone around the fire turns around, and they unveil that they have all grabbed and armed crossbows and aim directly at Kaskrin and Val. And let's roll for initiative.
As requested... on Discord, Selv with a 12.
Nice. Checkers with a 22. Kaskrin also with a 22. I think Checkers goes first.
I do.
Whoever wants to go first, I think you actually get to choose.
Okay.
Val with a 7.
You all are, again, I believe, 60 feet away, approximately. Just as the signal is being loosed, we'll say that you guys heard it, and that, the spell began to be cast. You all five of you, see a mini thunderbolt erupt from the ground as something laying in wait in the grass has enveloped Kaskrin. Val, you are close by.
Mm-hmm.
The other two of you are, I presume, a decent distance away. and guns, or excuse me, and crossbows.
Damn it.
Yeah.
They found all the forbidden technology.
Yeah, right. If they had guns,
guys,
like,
that's
we're
not.
Well,
here.
Well, let's
unreasonable.
The really that cool is. Part would be that the rules technically don't specify that I can't catch bullets.
That's true. Checkers, it is your go. How would you like to do this?
As Checkers and Mango sort of slide their way out of the shadows, still under the effect of Pass Without Trace, the pirates near the campfire just hear a
"You face Captain Checkers and his trusty frog pals, Mango and Junior. Chosen of the obelisk, terror of the waveless lake, and after tonight, master of the last skyship of Rixia."
You hear a laugh peal out from the campfire and echo around the dugout kind of behind them. And this captain peers into the darkness and just says, "Ah, step forward then and test your mettle against my blades."
"How about not?" And I'm going to cast a spell. This is going to be the third level druid spell, Plant Growth. As an action, Checkers is going to call out to all the different grasses and vines and trees in the area, and I'm going to cause all of them to grow wildly and turn into these like gnarly brambles and just get in people's way. In a 40-foot radius around where Captain Livingstone and the other pirates in this area are, all of this wild growth just shoots up, and movement in this area now costs 4 times as much.
What?
Wow. Yeah.
So cool. They're going to be struggling in there for a little bit.
Love it.
Mm-hmm. And then Checkers just says, "You guys want to see me do a backflip?" As Checkers does a backflip.
Always!
And
we don't all have dark vision, boy.
Well, you're not going to be seeing anything for much longer. And Checkers is going to do a backflip and use Action Surge. And this is going to be the third level spell, Thunderstorm, which is just sleet storm, but with rain.
But and thunder, presumably.
Yeah, right. So in another 40-foot radius around Captain Livingstone and his pirate allies, you just see this torrential downpour of rain and thunder, and the ground becomes this slick, slippery mud. Everything in the area is now heavily obscured, and the campfire that they were all sitting around goes out due to the, you know, intense rain that's coming down. In addition, this area is now difficult terrain, which is different than what I was doing with plant growth. So, because of the two effects, movement in this area now costs 8 times as much as it previously did. So they're going to need to spend 8 feet of movement to move 1 foot.
Why?
What?
Why?
So they are now in complete darkness due to the campfire going out. They are stuck in all of these brambly vines and growth and everything. And the slippery mud makes it difficult. And they also have to make a save to not fall over on their turn. So
at the start of their turn?
At the start of their turn, yeah. So I'm going to be asking for that.
Oh, great. I love it. Whoa.
Captain, something's happening.
And then as a bonus action, I'm going to use Torrential Might on Mango. So Mango's going to grow large size, just slowly expanding behind Checkers as he cackles in the night sky as this rain is pouring down on them.
A couple quick GM and potentially audience clarifications. First, you mentioned, I think you said 8 times twice in terms of difficult terrain. 8 is the total.
Total,
correct?
Yes.
Okay,
correct.
Between those two spells.
Yep.
Great. And then the second is, can you remind, again, me and potentially the listeners, what the total fucked area of this is?
It's a 40-foot radius around Captain Livingstone and the pirates.
In 40 foot with the downpour, and then is it 60 feet with the additional plant growth, or is it both 40?
They're both 40.
"It's so weird. It's pouring over there, but I'm bone dry over here. It's so odd."
And that's my turn.
And what a turn it was.
Yep.
It is now totally dark. All sources of light here on the ground are completely out. Luckily, a few of you have dark vision, either magically or just naturally. And now rain has begun. Kaskarin, your senses are a bit muffled at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
For a few reasons. You kind of just have a lot just kind of pushing up against like your ears and really just kind of all over your body. And also most of your attention is really focused on the fact that you have two giant sets of fangs plunging deep into your neck as this large creature that you did not see is now absolutely wrapped all the way around you.
Kaskrin takes note of this and also begins cackling, but it's more of a...
Oh, God. Is he crying?
No, I'm just raining.
It's raining.
It's a really tough cackle, actually.
He's psyching himself up.
Kaskrin is currently grappled by this enormous creature that ambushed him. And his first point of order is to get this thing the hell away from him. To do that, he is going to start by casting a spell. He's going to start by casting Enlarge on himself, growing his size twice over until he just slowly becomes like larger and larger and larger until he matches this thing in like size and ferocity. He's like kind of grappling it with the same energy that it's like trying to grapple him, and it's like trying to pull, you know, these like fangs out from his neck.
Yeah, now it's more like a stylish sash amount of creature instead of just fully wrapping your whole body.
Yes. And as a bonus action, because I have cast a spell, I can also make an attack. And I'm going to choose to use my attack as a counter grapple.
Okay.
I'm going to try to grapple it, which I believe is a contested athletics check.
Yes, it is.
That is a 26 for Kaskrin.
A natural one on my side. So that is a success. I'm not going to tell you how much of a success it was, so I will keep my GM secrets. What does it look like as you wrest control over this situation?
I think of the same way that like it was slithering around Kaskrin, like, you know, like grabbing Purchase. He's finally able to take his like enlarged right hand and rip this creature's fangs from his neck. In the same way, he begins to like kind of spin around and uncoil this thing until he finally gets it to where, like, you know, you're holding a snake by the middle and it can't quite move in either direction, like, can't quite bite you. He's like grabbing onto it with both hands and like holding in the middle to where it's just not quite effective.
Yeah, and at least it certainly is not going away anytime soon.
Yeah. And he raises up in the air. It's like, hey, whose pet is this?
It is Captain Silvertooth Livingstone's turn. He looks over at you all. Again, up until, sometime in the last 6 seconds or so, one of the largest non-magically enhanced dwarfs you've ever seen, covered head to toe in pouches, in leathers, in sashes, and of course, wearing an eye patch, having a peg leg. You hear this formidable dwarf yell out, "Oh, Simone's mine, as is the ship, as is the crew, as are these skies." And he points out into the darkness where you guys, you know, generally were. He can't quite see at this point, with a hooked hand.
Oh, no.
Important clarifying question. Are all of the pirate stereotypical items on one side, or do they zigzag?
Now that you've asked, absolutely they are.
Okay.
Yes. Is that?
I want like a dramatic turn, and then you see the eye patch, the hook, and the peg leg all.
Yeah. Yes.
He looks normal, and then what?
Yeah, exactly. And, like, the parrot and everything all on one side.
He is perfect profile, totally normal, just large pirate dwarf, and then goes to the other side and has every single accessory. And mobility aid that is stereotypical of a pirate. Precisely.
Hell yeah.
Those of you who have dark vision and can see this distance away, through the storm, I guess it would be heavily obscured, right, at this
That's
point.
That's right.
So, really, you guys can't... What is heavily obscured again? Can you just remind me and the listeners?
So, they're effectively blind when trying to see out, and we're blind when we try to see in. So, attack rolls against us will have disadvantage, and for us, attack rolls against... the captain will have disadvantage as well.
As a bonus action, he raises his hooked hand up to his temple, and then, like he's turning a key, rotates his wrist. And through the storm, Kaskrin and Val can now see a bright pinpoint of red light arcing straight through you and settling on the enlarged chest of Kaskarin Brightmane.
Cool.
Out of the torrential downpour come 3 crossbow attacks.
Oh my god.
That is a hit. The 19 on the die. What's your AC?
17.
That is another hit. And a natural 20.
Oh my god.
No.
I rolled very badly and rolled 23 points of piercing damage against you in total.
I'm going to reduce a little bit because that's 3 different attacks kind of, you know, piercing my armor and targeting my inner vital organs, but it's still a lot of damage.
And as a free action, he says, loud enough for his deep voice to ring across the torrential downpour, "Simone, time to strike." Because next up is Simone's turn.
Okay.
And at this call, Kaskarin, you feel a stir in the creature that you are currently grappling with.
I feel like I'm getting picked on today.
I would like you to please make me a wisdom saving throw.
Oh, God. Oh. Okay. That is an 8.
You said, David, I really appreciate the level of confidence you brought to
check it out. Oh, yeah. I got an 8.
Believe it or not, not the DC.
I failed.
Val, you are the closest to Kaskarin, and there is already so much storm activity that it is an onslaught to the senses with how dark and strange and cloudy and thundery it is. But you realize every hair on the back of your neck, on your arms, all across your body are standing on end.
Oh, no.
As you feel atmospheric pressure building.
Val whips around. Is there a tornado coming? Yeah.
Kaskarin?
Is there a dad somewhere just wide stancing looking at the sky?
Yeah, it's me. Kaskarin's like wide stancing.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
I love all the people in the Midwest will not understand.
There's a lot of people who will get that, though, and really appreciate it. Unfortunately, Kaskarin's dad stance does little to aid his wisdom.
What if I go wider?
Alas, you don't have the flexibility you once did. Because you feel a current course through this creature, and out of nowhere, a snap and crack of electricity hits you, coming straight from the body of whatever it is that you are currently locked in combat with.
Cool.
Currently.
Damn it. Ow, you take another 16 points of lightning damage.
Oh, no.
It gets worse.
Wait.
You are also dazed. Dazed is a flea mortals condition, and it is one of my favorite conditions and parts of the book, is you can only take one action on your turn. So it can be an action, a bonus action, or a move action. And that is it.
Okay. Got it. Kaskarin is already not looking good. Between the bite and the blood profusely leaking down his neck to him holding on to his lizard and having 3 crossbow bolts piercing his armor.
Well, it probably cauterized something.
Yeah.
Ooh, I have really bad news, Kaskarin.
Yeah.
Because there's still a bonus action.
Ooh.
And as a bonus action,
does it again.
It calls lightning from the sky.
It gets to bite you again.
Oh, good. Mm. Cool.
This is a straight d20 roll. 18 on the die.
Ooh.
10 more points of piercing damage.
I take a little bit less because it's piercing, but you know. I'm going to say somewhere within the 5 attacks, I probably lost concentration on enlarge.
You want to roll 5 times? All right.
You 100% should roll 5
times.
Okay,
let's see. First, fails.
Again with bravado.
Yeah. No, first, fails.
2 on the die.
Hell no.
So to answer your question, Kaskarin, it's his pet.
Yeah, yep.
So
I shrink, and then Simone the giant lizard falls on me. And
yes.
I
But you are still, as a reminder, you are still in charge of this grapple. Like, you're in a lot of pain, but Kaskarin, you are a badass adventurer, and nothing of what happened broke your hold on this creature.
Yeah. I at least got that going for
you. Got
me.
That
Val
going
is
for
yelling
you.
At you, let go of it!
That is the end of Simone's turn. Selvasterlin, you see again the battlefield in front of you. Things have gotten very bad.
I kind of see
you
it.
You see,
I mean,
some of the battlefield?
I used to see it in dim light before the downpour put all the lights out.
Yes.
So out of curiosity, moonlight? Any kind of light that I could actually see by? Or is it like pitch black?
Outside of the obscured area that Checkers has created, everything is lit by moonlight. So it is still a, you know, kind of, I think dim light is the
so
right
dim light, okay,
thing around it.
Can I see where the airship is tethered to the ground?
You probably, Selv, can't see exactly where it is, but A, you remember vaguely. Like, this obfuscation has happened all in the last 6 seconds. You know, it's like, yeah, it's that way. And also, you have a decent idea of like, well, huge black floating ship in the skies up there. It looks like there's a rope that kind of goes over in that general direction, and so you would know kind of how you need to start going.
Because it's dim light, but I can kind of make out the airship and see sort of the rope that comes down, I'm going to make an educated guess as to where that rope actually hits the ground and start making my way around towards that. As I do, I know that I can't see into the, let's just call it, maelstrom of effects that are around the pirates, but I heard the captain shouting from somewhere in there. So I'm going to make a guess as to about where he is. As I'm moving, I'm going to shoot a couple of darts in there and see if I hit anything.
Yep. Assuming he hasn't moved, you would be able to know where he was.
Yeah. Okay. So first dart. Ooh, 2 15s.
Ooh.
23.
Okay. You successfully throw darts.
7 points of damage with dart number one. And dart number two, also at disadvantage. Ooh, a 14 and a 17. So with the 14, that becomes a 22. The damage is, again, 7 points.
Okay.
As I shoot two darts into the wet, darkness, difficult terrain, viney
such
cylinder?
Yeah, I guess. That's wild that you just threw two darts and managed to hit, potentially.
I don't know.
Yeah,
unless I hear like, ow! Or,
you
know,
you managed to roll really well at disadvantage.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And then, like I said, I'm going to make my way towards the rope.
Okay, so are you going around kind of the long way around the outskirts of this plant growth and storm, or are you kind of going up and around on top of the hill that they were dug out on?
I am going up and around the hill.
Okay, perfect. Anything else?
That is it for right now.
Okay. Joe! Sir! Joe! Sir! Joe! Yes, sir! Other Joes! Yes, sir! Yes, sir! After them. And from inside of the storm, inside of all of this plants, everything else, some crossbow bolts start whirring out as the Joes, the rest of the crew members, blindly fire through the storm. Val, you see a volley of crossbow bolts all be shot directly at you. Rolled really bad.
You say that, it's going to hit me.
Does a 17 hit?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
That's rolling really poorly? What the hell do you mean?
Yeah, yep. Guys, you guys are level 9 now. Like,
That doesn't mean I have a high AC. I've invested in other things.
They rolled like a 5 or something. Like, yeah. We're so dead.
Oops. Okay. So, actually, no. Excuse me. I accidentally rolled with advantage instead of disadvantage. So they only rolled an 11 to hit.
Okay, well, that's just so we're good then.
Okay. All these crossbow bolts just kind of fling past you, and you can see as they kind of emerge from the storm, there are pinpoints of hot orange light at the end of each crossbow bolt. And they all, you know, kind of like go past you and around you, and you're able to kind of duck out of the way because you can see them coming a little bit even. But you see, as they hit the ground around you, they start to have some smoke start to rise from the tips where they landed in the grass surrounding you. Amidst the torrent, all yelling as one, "Lead us, Captain! Tell us what to do! We believe in you!" As all of the Joes, who they are collectively named apparently, call out words of encouragement to their captain. Probably have no mechanical bearing whatsoever. Don't worry about it.
Absolutely not.
That is the end of their turn. You presume. End of the round.
No.
Valeska Carter.
Oh, I was like, hey,
you are the
excuse
end of
me.
Yes. I always appreciate, as someone who routinely fucks up initiative order, I appreciate it. It was at the end of the order, I should say, is Valeska Carter.
I'm going to quickly mind sliver the giant lizard in Cass's arms.
Which, by the way, you have dark vision, correct?
Yes.
And between that and the light, you are maybe one of the only people who can really get a good look at what is currently grappling Kaskrin, because he can kind of tell, but he's really in the thick of it right now.
Yeah.
It looks like Kaskrin is wrestling a giant constrictor snake of some sort.
Ooh.
And it appears to be totally jet black or something along that color spectrum, other than a few now prevalent traces of like bright yellow electric energy marking all around it as it rears back to try and strike him again with those big snake flaps. You know, like a mamba. Like, you know those ones where it's like
a king cobra?
Exactly. Where they kind of have that extra little bit of skin that flares out. And that is probably 3 or 4 feet across. Just that bit of it.
Nope. Hard pass. Val cast Mind Sliver while backing away.
Nope, 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 nope. Okay, what happens?
I need an intelligence saving throw, DC 16.
Okay. You know, for a beast, she's quite intelligent, but rolled a 6 on the die, so not that intelligent.
So visions of insert name for fantasy honey badger here invade this lizard's mind, and it's just images of honey badgers absolutely ripping apart snakes.
In reaction, it shocks Kaskrin again, because it's so afraid that it just automatically uses defense mechanisms.
We'll just take 5 points of force damage?
Psychic damage?
Psychic damage. And then as a bonus action, Val will cast Healing Word on Kaskrin.
Oh, thank God.
And you're a special dwarf boy, so you get max, right?
Yes. Because of Kaskrin's special ability, I heal the max amount that I would.
Ooh.
So how much is that?
Very good.
12.
Okay, fantastic. Kaskrin's still not looking great, but he's looking...
2d4 plus 4.
Oh, yeah. A little bit better.
At least the bleeding has stopped.
And this is... And you, how far exactly would you say you have backed away, Sophie?
Val has moved kind of closer to the hill.
Okay, so kind of... you do not know that Selva's heading that way.
Right.
Maybe that was part of the opening plan. I'm not sure. You cannot see that he has moved that way, at least. But good to know that you're kind of moving towards the hill and towards where the ship is tethered.
Yes, and kind of hoping that, like, breaking up the party in case, I don't know, a pirate can cast Fireball a little
split
bit.
Split the party,
battle
great idea.
Battle trigonometry.
Love it. I love to hear it. Anything
no,
else?
No, it's battle trigonometry, not splitting the party.
Mm-hmm, sure, yeah, of course.
That is my turn.
Okay. Top of the round, almost. Because the captain is going to take a villain action.
Ah.
Through it all. All this downpour, all the lightning, all the zippy zops, and all of those, I don't know, sprinting around plant growth, I suppose. You hear, "Put your shoulder into it, boys!" And then something happens that none of you can see. Now, top of the round. Kaskrin, you are ensconced in some sort of reptile.
Yep.
That has shocked you, and you are dazed. Selv and Val are both kind of independently working their way around this combat, making their way generally toward where the ship is tethered. And Checkers is just kind of in the shadows.
Yes.
At the top of the round, before Checkers acts,
hey,
another thing happens.
No.
Stay bold a bit longer, boys. We'll turn the tides yet. And everyone who is nearby hears a sound, a kind of loud bang, and sees just a flash of orange light ascend up through the rain and downpour, and presumably emerge on the other side of these clouds that I think are 40 feet up, correct?
20 feet up.
20 feet up. So very quickly emerge on the other side. You see just a bit of yellow light. And that's all. Checkers, it is your turn.
Cass, you okay over there? I'll take that as a no. And Checkers and Mango are going to dash over there to Caspin to see if we can help out a little bit. So
I'm like struggling under the weight of this giant creature. Like, I don't know what compelled me to lift this thing over my head, but it was not a good idea.
I mean, at the time, they were enlarged, so that made more sense.
So Checkers and Mango are going to head over to where Caspin is, and Mango is going to leap into action. I'll give up my action to have Mango try and attack this snake. Mm. And Mango is going to try and grapple the creature.
You know, Mango is accustomed to wet, slimy situations. Mm-hmm. Some would say he's the cause of most of these wet and slimy situations.
Correct.
But you don't know if it came like this. You don't know if all this kind of action and downpour has led us to this. You don't know if maybe a GM forgot an ability in the first round of combat of this creature. It's impossible to say. There's literally no way to know. But man, whatever has Caskrin is really slippery and really strong. Okay. And it has advantage against grapple jacks. rolled an 18 on the die.
I got a 16 total.
It just holds on to Caskrin tighter, basically.
Okay. And then as my bonus action, I'm going to see if I can buy Caskrin a little breathing room. I'm going to cast the first level spell Sanctuary on him.
So
a big sphere of water kind of comes up around him, and like looking through the sphere of water, Castron's kind of like refracted inside of it, so you can't get a good view of where he is. Ugh. Anyone that tries to take a hostile action against him has to make a DC 17 Wisdom saving throw.
Cool.
But you're Castron, you're going to have to let go of that grapple.
Okay.
You also can't be hostiling against the enemy.
That's fair.
And Checkers knows generally where those crossbow bolts came from, so he's going to try and take cover behind a tree, block line of sight between him and where he thinks the pirates are.
Just keep making everyone attack Cass. I love it. Sounds perfect.
Yep. And that's the end of my turn.
Caskrin, completely of his own volition, and definitely not because this lizard is too large, drops the lizard. And like, at least tries to like not crumble under the weight of this giant thing and just like tosses it. Caskrin is like looking at his hands. So it's like, sweet, I'm in a ball of water. This is cool. And he's also dazed, so he's not feeling so good. Remind me, that means I have one action.
Correct. And it can be any of your actions. It can be a full action with no penalty, etc.
Free action. I take a thought.
Yep. It's a little slower, but I will allow it as long as you don't think too hard about it.
Okay. Caskrin is actually going to use another new ability.
Oh, okay.
And this is an ability that he's never actually had a reason to use before yet.
New to combat use in the podcast, not new as you got it in the level up.
Yes, correct. This ability was granted to him by the Citadel during the last time they had communed. And what it allows him to do is, as a free action, he can move up to his movement speed, ignoring difficult terrain and attacks of opportunity.
Ooh.
And it's meant to allow him to get in the middle of someone, you know, try to protect someone from taking a hit. But it actually works out perfectly here, because he, seeing that Selv and Val have kind of like gone off into the distance, he gets an idea of what they're trying to do, but he's like rooted. He's disoriented. But he musters up the clarity of thought to run 25 feet in the direction of Val, trying to get a bead on either of them.
I'll say that I'm not going to do dumb geometry because I did badly in all math classes. I will absolutely say that you can see both of them with these angles if you pepper in a little, what you're calling on something in this moment. to charge forward into it, something supernatural. What does that feel or look like for Kaskrin?
Kaskrin is looking bloodied. Like, he's looking, he's got the crossbow bolt sticking out of him. He's looking like a little crispy, a little burnt, a little bloodied. And he kind of looks like this, you know, shadow in this storm. But all of a sudden, you can see this faint glow appear around him, just this warm, gentle glow around his skin. And it almost looks like some of the wounds are gone, and he's maybe looking a little bit more spry. And to some degree, it's an illusion. But to people looking at him, people expecting a hero, this is like the symbol that they need. And so he looks ready to keep fighting. And in that moment of recharge, he runs in the direction. He sees Val. He sees Selv. And he's going to try to give them the same boost that he feels. He's going to cast Twinned Haste on both of you.
Which conveniently gets around the whole don't attack anything, I guess.
Synergy.
And with that, Selv and Val, you have +2 to armor, you have double your movement speed, and you get an extra action you can use to attack.
All right. End of Kaskrin's turn, I presume, in that you can do one thing,
yes.
And you did two things.
Yeah. Wow, look at that. Got around it, baby.
It is Captain Livingstone's turn. And his voice calls out, "Maybe you all simply came across this camp hoping for an easy fight and the spoils of a quick battle. There's still time to run, for you will find nothing quick about us." And he is going to take his reinforcement action, which he can do once a day. Kaskrin, Selv, and Val, not checkers, all hear a zipping sound coming above you. For those of you who may or may not look up, you see the silhouettes of 5 mortals rapidly descending the tether of the ship and all landing on the battlefield a few feet away from where Selv and Cass and Val all are. All of them, quickly, one after the other, zip, 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 land on the ground and unbuckle some sort of device that they propelled themselves down with and kind of slowed their fall appropriately. As they land, they all bear these big hooked spears that look just nasty. And they all start to glow red. "Like I said, still time to fly away." That's the end of his turn. It is Simone's turn. Now, Simone.
No, my natural predator.
Speaking of natural predators,
yes.
You know who's extremely, extremely close to all of this?
Mm-hmm.
Checkers and Mango.
Mm-hmm.
You know who's not a giant, giant frog? Checkers.
Okay, that's fair.
It is going to sneak up to you. Not mechanically sneak, but going to come up to you. And once it is about 10 feet away from you, you now get to experience and see this creature just light up and glow ever so faintly, all of those little yellow accent marks start to glow. And then it opens its frills and opens its mouth. And then things go white for a second.
Okay.
Please make me a wisdom saving throw.
I'm going to use my heroic inspiration on this. It feels relevant.
Oh, okay.
That's a good thing. Good thing I used it. 20.
That is a pass.
Oof. Nice. Ooh, safe.
You still take damage.
Wow, only 3/4 damage.
21 points of damage.
Halved?
Halved. I just wanted to, it's just fun to say.
Okay.
So you take half of that, and you are not dazed.
Cool.
However, as a bonus action, it's still going to try and bite you.
Let me make that concentration check first.
Absolutely.
I'm fine.
Okay. So it is going to use the rest of its movement. It is a very speedy boy, and is going to move up and is going to use a bonus action. Actually, it's not even going to move up. It has reach.
Sure.
And just do an attack. That is a big miss.
Cool.
So it seems to think that it has you dazed and right where it wants you. She wants you. It's Simone.
Yeah.
And almost lazily reaches out to grab you, but you are unaffected enough to get out of the way.
Checkers has a lot of practice pretending to be electrocuted from when we fought the Varala Devale and the Godslayer axe. So, like, he puts on his best, I'm dead, act, and then just slips away.
Got him.
Got him.
Okay, that is the end of Simone's turn. Selvastrolin, it is your go. Five crew members have all just dropped down from the ship and are all either mostly unhooked or just about unhooked, kind of getting ready to charge into the battlefield. But you feel a little zippy.
Did they all come down the same guide rope?
Yes. So they just kind of went one right after the other.
Okay.
And they perfectly spaced themselves out so that they were
they able
to
and move and
land, then unlatch, move all super quickly.
And how high up is the airship?
I think we described it loosely as a I think I said few, but it's like a 200 to 300-ish feet. I can make it more specific if that is relevant.
It might be.
Okay.
I need your DM ruling on this as to whether or not this particular rope, the tether, counts as a vertical surface.
Your dexterity is high enough that absolutely it would count as a vertical surface, yes.
So there's this nice nifty thing called unarmored movement improvement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can move along vertical surfaces and across liquids on your turn without falling during the move. Having been hasted, that makes my regular walking speed 90. What I would like to do is weave my way very quickly past all of these reinforcements. You said there were five, right?
Correct.
And then essentially sprint up this rope. I would also like to spend a key point to do Step of the Wind, which will allow me to dash as a bonus action.
Uh-huh.
So I will use my movement of 90,
yeah,
plus my dash of 90, plus my action to move, which would get me 270 feet if my math holds out.
That seems correct, and 270 is indeed somewhere between 200 and 300 feet.
So if that's enough to get me on top of the airship.
Yes.
here's the best part. Is that because of haste?
Yep.
I have an attack.
Oh, yeah.
You just have a whole extra action on top of all of that.
So I'm going to run up, put my foot onto the base of the rope there, just take a deep breath, and run up the rope to the airship.
Okay. So these creatures have not yet acted in combat. I am going to have them make an attack of opportunity against you, but I am going to do it at disadvantage. And I am also going to say that because not all of them are involved in it, they are not going to be able to do anything with their hooks or anything like that to stop you. So you're just maybe taking some damage. We'll see. 14 to hit.
With the haste, my armor class is currently 20.
Okay, nice. Big cool. Miss. So the couple who have kind of steeled themselves and are ready and trying to figure out what's going on the battlefield take a few half-hearted swings at you as a silvery red blur just absolutely sprints past them.
I'm also kind of imagining like the way that you ran up that rope, like you put your foot on there and then you just like kicked so hard and so fast, like you were able to propel yourself to the next step and just like kept going 300 feet.
Yeah, just essentially crouching tiger, hidden dragon, floated up.
We did some wire foo. And I'm going to do a little leap at the end so I can kind of come over the guard railing and land onto the ship. What do I see?
At the top, closest to you, It is picture the top of a ship. It looks, you know, how you, Steve, would imagine the top of the ship. There's some raised bits. There are, you know, portholes, all that good stuff. It really, truly looks just like a normal nautical ship, except in the air. Closest to you are an additional 5 crew members who are in various states of kind of getting ready and strapping on those same pulley systems that you saw the other 5 at the bottom of the rope put on. And they all kind of stop what they're doing and just look up at you, and their eyes kind of squint.
Actually, in that just that half second, Selv is just going to say,
"Abandon ship."
Nice.
Well, you may say that with even more vitriol here in a moment. Ooh. Because behind these crew members, attached to the ship through nets, ropes, chains, you see a still quite large but smaller than average sky whale.
Oh, no, no.
And in that half moment, it lets out a beautiful, multi-toned, mournful cry that sounds like 2 or 3 different animal voices all in harmony with one another.
Selv believes in helping people, so I'm just going to help all of these pirates off the ship faster than they would have normally.
Sure, we're going to help them early grave. Yeah.
Seems good. You do still have an action.
I do still have an action. Now, for haste, is it a full attack action?
One attack.
Okay.
Sorry, I read the spell.
Yep.
Okay. How could you read the spell?
If you read it,
Nathan knows what it does.
Hide or have an object interaction.
That's true.
I am going to use the Fist of Unbroken Air and attempt to hit them.
Okay.
A natural 20.
Hey!
Just dang. The acceleration of velocity of just like Selv running up the rope and just powering that fist.
If you ever wondered what happens if you're traveling the speed of light and put the headlights on, this is what happens.
And the headlights are also very upset.
Yes. And so with that, I do 10 points total of damage, and I am going to spend a key point and make them make a strength saving throw or be pushed back 10 feet and knocked prone. My goal is to knock them off the ship and hopefully into the
maelstrom.
Yeah.
You absolutely make full contact with one of these people who is like still getting essentially their pants on. And so what do they need to make?
It is a strength saving throw, DC 15.
Not the strongest. It's a 12.
Well, that is not a 15.
Describe what happens.
So Selv, after landing on the top of the ship and telling them to abandon it, helps the first one he sees get off the ship as quickly as possible.
So actually, I'm going to say because this is a minion, what I'm going to do, and you rolled a natural 20, you hit the minion, so you will automatically get one of them. Okay. And just knock one unconscious or dead or whatever. But I will say that this gust is so powerful as propelled by all of your momentum and fury, whatever, that it actually snakes around and hits a second one.
Ooh.
And sends that one flying
I'll
over the
take
edge.
It.
Cool.
That's awesome.
Nice.
So, yeah, and just then, you know, one of them just like laid out completely and the other one.
You guys here down on the ground. And somewhere near you, there is a cloud of dust. It is the Joe's turn. They do something that you cannot see. As a villain action, you hear Captain Livingstone says, "Find and gut the first one you see." They immediately use the close-in ability. They can move up to their speed, which is close enough to you guys. And first of all,
mm-hmm.
Sophie, could you please make a DC 15 wisdom saving throw?
I have advantage on wisdom saving throws.
Perfect.
16 on the die for a lot.
For a lot. That is all that matters. So you can tell that this was meant to intimidate you. Like, very specifically, was that this was a, like, reinforcements are here. The tables have turned, and oh shit, they're running right at me. And they're all gnashing their teeth. They have these glowing weapons. You can see they're a motley crew of various mortals, different sizes, shapes, but there is a uniform tenacity and roughness to each of them. But you stand there, cool, calm, collected. They are up on you, but you are unfazed by their show of force.
I would like to flavor this differently. As they approach me, Val starts maniacally laughing. like an unhinged laughter escapes her lips. And please remember, she is full predator camo makeup now. And she would like to use her small stature, unhinged laughter, and camo face paint to turn the tables on them. Mechanically, I cannot do anything to intimidate them. They're walking into something.
But mechanically, what you can do is take your next turn, which is right now.
They're closing in on me? They are surrounding me right now?
Yes. So this is
they're
another,
approaching me.
This is another batch of minions that are now right next to you.
Perfect. Normally I wouldn't say that, but honestly. This is quite quite
strange.
Good. You know, I'm going to try something new.
we're doing a lot of new things
today.
Sure,
great. You love to hear it.
I would like every single minion to make me a strength saving throw.
Okay. They make it all at once.
All the single minions, all the single minions.
Man, their strength is not as good as you would hope it would be. Huh. That is a 15.
Ah, meets my DC, but they will still take half damage.
Ooh, okay, cool.
6 points of damage as Val, maniacally laughing, seeing these pirates surround her. Her arms are at her side as then she just raises them up with like clawed, her hands kind of making like clawed formations as dark energy erupts from the ground 10 feet around her and starts ripping apart all of the minions.
Oh.
Huh.
These tendrils look nothing like her magic normally does. It's not this warm, bright blue that kind of gives hope. This is dark purple necrotic energy that looks like it is sucking the very life out of every minion around her. As she continues maniacally laughing and her eyes glow with the same dark purple energy.
One is immediately like turned into a husk and falls to the ground.
Cool.
I think we lost Val.
Yeah.
You know, tendrils coming up. I'm expecting, you know, brightly colored bookmarks.
Yeah.
Okay, they are up next. They're going to take a quick attack.
Whoa, whoa. That was my first action.
Oh, hasted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hasted.
Mm-hmm. In her maniacal laughter, she is actually going to, as an action.
The hasted action.
Val will go ahead and bust out her Yquala, her like mini spear that she's carried around this entire time and is never used. And make an attack on the nearest pirate.
Yep, absolutely.
Just stabbing people. All right.
Yeah. Rolled a two.
Oh, okay. Well,
but minion, what's the total?
Six.
Yeah, that does. Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Sophie. Yep. All right.
She really, really, it's more of like another intimidation tactic.
Yeah.
She's not
going
to hit them.
Shoot.
It's just like, come at me.
And I got
bro,
this. I got this spear.
Yeah.
They are going to indeed try and come at you. They kind of steel themselves a little bit and do some half hearted stabs at you. 17
damage. That hits.
4 points of piercing damage.
Val continues to laugh maniacally.
Excellent. Selv, the ones up at the boat are going to also start charging at you. They're just kind of throwing their gear to the side, grabbing what weapons are available to them, and trying to do some stabs upon you.
Okay.
And they're not happy about what just happened, to be clear. Ooh, that is a 22 to hit.
Oh, man. Yeah, that'll hit.
Okay, so between the various... I'll say that they also have picked up their kind of like hooked spears, and with the kind of red-hot intensity that lights up in them, you take 12 points of fire damage.
Wow.
Dang.
And that is the end of the second round of combat, which is when you, Self, hear something.
Preparation complete. Prepare to launch.
And then you hear a metallic clunk and the sound of something coming out of a chute. Down below, Val and Kaskrin see something glinting in the moonlight high above them. Huge dust cloud kicks up. And you all hear the captain's voice ring out under all of the rain and torrential downpour and say, Boltai, glad you made it. Time to have some fun, my old friend. And you see a four-legged, fiery creature stand up in this small crater and skitter over to a hunk of metal that has fallen out of the ship and climb up upon it, and then whoosh, a huge cascading cape of fire sprouts as a metal automaton stands up in the crater, eyes fiery and burning, and looks to Kaskrin and Val and begins to advance. And that is where we'll end this week's episode, everybody.
What?
Everything's going to be
bad.
Just fine.
You didn't tell me there was a phase two.
Yeah.
Oops.
Okay.
Gotta get in character.
Infrastructure.
Where's your... You forgot your hat. Yeah.
You face Captain Checkers and his trusty frog pals, Mango and Junior.